Hey, good evening. Thank you and welcome back. Now, I don't have a guest tonight, and I was going to share with you a lot of interesting just slides that I had because, you know, there are a lot of us who we share medical data, we share medical information back and forth, and I know a lot of people don't get a chance to read this stuff, and it really makes you understand what's going on better if you can have the data. So I was going to try and do that. We couldn't quite make that work out, but I am going to talk about something. A couple things that have come to my attention that I've been working on for the last week. And one of them is, people ask me all the time, what's happening to the blood supply? And are people that are being vaccinated, are they contributing to the blood supply? And the answer is yes, okay? But one of the things as far as I know, we're not screening out anybody for the blood supply. But one of the things I didn't think about, because it doesn't affect most of us, was organ transplants, organ donation. What's happening in the organ donation community? So, you know, one of the things that I'm not a general surgeon, so I don't deal with this very often. I'm an orthopedic surgeon. So in the past, I didn't involve much, not at all, maybe with organ donation. But the people that are involved in this, they can tell you that it is a really very precise, well-oiled machine for the most part of how this happens, because obviously organ donation has to be done quickly while people are technically still alive and are about to be pronounced dead, but they're not completely off life support yet because the organs have to be healthy to be transplanted. So one of the things they do, they have a screening database, and this is what I'm going to get to, that I think there are hundreds of, well, if not more, because if you're now on a respirator and you're going to be taken off the respirator, for better or for worse, you show up on a database as a potential organ donor. Now, if you did well, obviously you're not going to be, but if you're being thought about taking off because you're dying, you're brain dead, or they're about to disconnect you, you show up as an organ donor. Now, they screen people that are then screened. They have tests, they have histories, they have all sorts of information. And it goes into, every state has a database, and I can't remember the different terms of the databases, but they have a database to look at what's happening around their state, so they have real-time ability to deal with it. So one of the things I became aware of, that there are these people that screen for these organs. And I got a kind of an inside tip that here's what's happening. And I think this is important to understand because of what we're also seeing in the Indiana insurance, the ONS data out of Britain. We are seeing increased deaths and specific type of deaths. So what I was told by a guy that's an organ donor screener, okay? A person that just talks all day to people all over the country, apparently, where to determine whether or not people are organ donors and who's being sent. And for example, years ago when we had the opioid crisis, there was a lot of suicides and death in younger people. And they saw that in the organ donating crowd. So what are they seeing now? Well, it turns out that there's a lot of blood clots and death of young people. At first, these people started, the screeners started seeing apparently the older people, you know, as vaccines were given, the older people started dying of bleeding and blood clots, but they were older people and nobody really paid attention to that. But now they're starting to see that uptick in death among younger people, 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds with like cranial blood clot that killed them. But it's, and what's interesting, I was told, is that it's not just one blood clot, it's multifocal. So we are seeing a very different picture than we would see in normal times. We're seeing an uptake in total number of deaths, and we're seeing different kinds of deaths. Lots of sudden unexpected myocardial infarcts in people without hypertension, no high blood pressure, and no history of cardiac disease under the age of 55. Yes, it can happen, but there's a sudden trend. Now, I mean, why is this? Why is what I'm just mentioning this because every time you argue about the data about, and I shouldn't say argue, when you discuss the data about the death count in VAERS, what are we always told? Well, VAERS isn't very good. It's self-reported. There's a lot of mistakes. It's, you know, but that even VAERS, the point about VAERS is to be a tripwire, a trigger. It's supposed to show you unusual patterns and things like that, which it does. But by itself, they discount it by saying, oh, millions and millions of people have been giving these vaccines and there's very little in the way of death. Well, now we're seeing what the lawyers would could call the preponderance of evidence. And the preponderance of evidence now looks like this. We not only have VAERS telling us there's something wrong, the actual death count in VAERS, just being very conservative and looking at, if you check the mark that says only the United States and territories, you're not taking all global entries, but United States and territories, we've had over twice the deaths in 2021 than we had in 31 years of all vaccines put together. And this was just the COVID vaccine. So that should be a check mark. That's a data checkpoint. The next one now is that we have increased number of deaths of pilots. Okay, this came out through the AOPA journal. AOPA is a private, you know, it's the Airline Owners and Pilots Association. And, you know, you can be a civilian pilot, you can be a military pilot, you can be a private, usually a lot of private pilots are members, and you're a member of this. And so, you know, when they die, you put your name in memoriam for one of their members. I can tell you the exact numbers here because I know a lot of pilots. And so I've been with pilots a lot in my life. And I know about this, when it hit me, I remember the numbers. So there was, in 2019, there was one death of a pilot that was mentioned by AOPA in the memorial section. In 2020, there were 9 deaths. In 2021, the year of the vaccine, there were 111 deaths. Again, sharp rise. Now that's another data point. So we got VAERS, we got the AOPA journal. Now we have the ONS, and ONS is the Office of National Statistics, I believe is what it stands for in Britain. And what have they been telling us? They've been showing, and I can't remember them all in my head right now, but they've been showing us the numbers of, for example, boys under the age of 18. Death rate is up, and I want to say 52%, but it may be even more. But there's an increased uptake in children's deaths, and now across the board, all-cause mortality is up over 40%. Ireland, there's another data point. I had a friend call from Ireland, and they have an on-site, it's an on-site reporting of your dead relative so that people can go to wakes and to mourn. It's just a tradition in Ireland. I think it's rip.com or rip.org. And so when someone dies, they get put up on this. And they're seeing a mark in 2020, they didn't see a big uptick. But in the year of the vaccine, 2021, the numbers are going up and continue to go up. And now the big one that really hit me is the insurance company in Indiana. And you know, insurance companies live and die by actuarial numbers. Actuaries get paid big bucks for being statisticians of death and all the bad things that happen to you. I mean, actuaries know if you live to 80, what's your chance during that period of time that you'll have a femur fracture or, you know, you'll become blind or whatever. They know all these statistics because they have to bet. Their insurance company, insurance is a big bet, and they're going to bet that this doesn't happen to you, and this is how much it's going to cost them to take that bet. So they know these things. They don't do it by random chance. Well, the Indiana CEO of this insurance company pointed out that in 2021, there was a 42% all-cause mortality uptick. So an increased all-cause mortality in Indiana, 42%. Now, that number may not ring too big bells, but here's what also is pointed out, that he points out. They consider an insurance disaster what they call, not three omega, what is it called? They consider a 10% uptick in total death rate to be a major, major problem for the insurance company. It's supposed to only happen one in every 200 years, 10%. We now have a 40% increase. He's never seen this, never heard of this before. Now, it may explain why you're hearing that people that took the vaccine are now being classified as suicides or other things to not pay the insurance claim. I can't prove that's happening, but I could see the point, because a 40% increase in all-cause mortality is going to be a huge disaster for the insurance industry. And now we have another data point, and that is the tissue donor people, the people that screen for organ donation. And they too are seeing all-cause mortality. They're seeing more bodies come through, more death that can be considered possible organ donors, and they're seeing specific things. And those specific things are the same things that we're seeing that Tom Renz just talked to Senator Johnson and his committee about in the military. You're seeing increase in cancer, which don't go to the organ donors, but you're seeing an increase in bleeding and blood clots and autoimmune disease, neurologic disease. Tom Renz has a whistleblower apparently, and he disclosed at this meeting that the rate of cancer in the military was up 300%. The rate of neurologic complications or neurologic diseases were up 1,000%. Now, when I was in the military and I spent 10 years as a Navy general medical officer and then surgeon, I can tell you we didn't have computers. So we didn't really, we were just getting computers. I mean, we didn't have a database like they have now, but now they have a military-wide epidemiologic database. And so I have some numbers here that I think are actually kind of interesting that let me just read to you, because these are numbers that I was able to get because I've been talking about this. And so I get some phone calls periodically from people. And I'm just, if you, and it had to be, I was talking to somebody about the great DOD medical epidemiologic database glitch. So you noticed what happened, that after Tom Renz, attorney at law, was speaking about the increased uptake and all these bad things happening in the military, suddenly they reported that there was a great DOD medical epidemiology database glitch, and for the last 5 years it hasn't been functioning right. I think that's kind of funny in itself. But here's the kind of thing that happens. So before the glitch, they claimed that in 2020, there were 1,900 COVID cases. Now, their cases are, by the way, I assume are positive tests. I don't know if these are sick people because we've redefined what it is to be a case. But let's just say that they're just tests, okay? 1,900 in 2020, and 116,000 in 2021. In other words, before the vaccine rollout, there were 1,900 positive tests, and after the vaccine rollout, 116,000. And he reported that. Okay. But now they've had a glitch connection once they realized what was going on. And now they have in 2020, 84,000 positive tests and still 116,000 in 2021. So the numbers in 2021 didn't change. Apparently, the glitch is very, very specific. The other thing that, that the glitch did, and let me see if I can find it. Well, I can't find that one. But this is even without the glitch. But the one thing that they didn't count on is that there are some numbers that are hard to fudge. So in the military database, when you go in apparently and you're a patient in a clinic, whatever you go in for, let's say you go in for a headache and they then code your visit from the ICD-10 code or whatever code they use for a headache, that's considered a count. And they keep a number of how many counts were present in the military database in the year 2020. So every time you come in, now if you go in for toe fungus and a headache, you get two counts for this one visit. So it has to do by diagnostic group. In the year 2020, there were 2 million counts. That means that in a population of military of about 1.5 million or 1.4 million, I think it's something like that, 1.4 million active duty people in the military today. And in 2020, there were 2 million ICD-10 codes or 2 million counts, which means there were 2 million diagnoses made on those people. We don't know what those diagnoses were, but there were 2 million. In 2021, the year of the vaccine, there were 21 million counts. Now, that is a big change, okay? We'll see now after I've said this, we'll see if there's another glitch in the DOD database. This is my little test to see. But that's the kind of interesting fact that stays kind of ahead of the narrative. So I'll leave this before we go to break. I just want to leave this with a question. What does this do to our military readiness? You know, early on when the Australians vaccinated their Navy, we heard stories creeping out that their readiness had gone down considerably. What do these 21 million counts mean for our military readiness? So I'll let you think about that. And after the break, we'll go over some more data. Thank you.
This is an amazing company that has sponsored both of us. And this is a way to have backup communications when the grid goes down.
Well, the situation became problematic, Mike, with the New Orleans, the latest hurricane, because people panic. And this is one thing that I've learned from being associated with the satellite phone store for over a decade. People will call and order 600 phones at a time.
What?
It's like this, Mike. Anytime there is a crisis, people want these. And ladies and gentlemen, they've created such a good deal for Mike's viewers, my viewers, our combined viewers, that this is the only way you're going to be able to communicate.
And that's the other beauty about these phones, is they can't track you because it's not talking to a cell tower. It's talking to satellites, you know, orbiting over the equator. So SAT123.com, folks.
J&M Jewelry specializes in custom engagement rings that are made in America. Our master designers have years of experience in all types of engagement ring styles. Since we are manufacturers and wholesalers, we can provide you with the highest quality GIA certified diamonds or gemstones at the lowest price. Schedule an appointment with us today.
J&MJewelry.com.
Okay, thank you. I'm back. This is our statistics night. And specifically, I'm talking about military statistics right now. And in October 2021, I spoke somewhere, now I can't remember where I was speaking, but I made these comments. I said, you know, if you look back year after year in our military, going back to 2016, from 2016 to 2019, about the average number of myocarditis cases reported were about 850, give or take a little bit. I've got 2016, there were 829. In 2019, there were 971, but its average is about 850. And in 2020, the year of COVID was 856. So the year of COVID did not bring on a rash of myocarditis. And remember, one of the things with the vaccine that we're worried about are these incidents and these constant reports now of myocarditis that even the CDC acknowledges. Now, in 2021, in the database for the military, there were 1,650 reported cases of myocarditis. And I mentioned that. And my point was this. If they only lost 20 people, 20 people dead in 2020 to COVID, the death rate of myocarditis is about 50% or more, 50 to 50-60% in standard practice, of myocarditis at 5 years, by 5 years. It's a little over half are dead in 5 years. They may survive early, but they don't necessarily live past 5 years after the diagnosis. Now, if that's true, and there were 800 excess cases in 2021 that weren't present in those previous years, then those are presumably attributable to the vaccine. And at a 50% death rate, that would be 400 excess deaths attributable to the vaccine and myocarditis. In other words, we would have killed 20 times the people from the vaccine, and just with this one diagnosis, then was killed by COVID, because these are young, healthy people that tended not to die of COVID, okay? And I was making that point based on the numbers that were in the database. Now, then what happened is, and I call this the merit effect, at some point, those numbers got changed in the database. So that then they went down, like 2016 went from 829 to 579. 2019 went from 971 to 608. Not huge things, but the 1650 number, the 1650 number in 2021 went to 307. Okay, so I'm going to call that the merit effect. And then we had Thomas Rentz speaking in front of the whole world and at Senator Johnson's committee, and he gave out numbers. And what happened after those numbers to the myocarditis effect? Or to the myocarditis numbers. Now, I haven't looked at all things. I just was looking at that. I just got those numbers, okay? And I call this the Rentz effect. So the number of myocarditis cases went back to that magic number of 1,650, which I had talked about in October of 21, or at the end of 21. Now it's back to 1650. But instead of the 629, the number went before I was speaking from in 2020 from 856, and then it went down to 629 after I got done speaking, and now it's back up to 1,611, more than it ever was. And now we're seeing numbers like in 2017, they're up to 1,876. In other words, they've doubled the numbers. The numbers of myocarditis somehow mysteriously doubled in the DOD database. So the 1650 this year of 2021 doesn't look so bad. What is going on here? Okay. We have to figure out what's really going on and not do this. This is purposeful obfuscation, and somebody needs to be aware of this. I don't know what else to say. It's fraud. Now, let's just make this point that how do we know? You know, I had talked earlier, a long time ago when about the Chinese and the book that was written years ago, I believe it was 1999, and it was called, in Chinese it's a big long name, like Warfare Beyond Rules, Judgment of War, something in the era of globalization. It was written by two, and we call it Unrestricted Warfare. That's the name of the book. You can find it by in English, and it's written by two Chinese colonels called Colonel Zhao and Colonel Wang. It was written in 1999. And their point about this was, we've looked at the American military and what they did in Iraq and during the Iraq War, and we just can't match them, using conventional weapons, because they can always outspend us. So what are we going to do? Well, if you're going to have a smaller, less economically robust country fight a superpower, they have to do it with this unrestricted, unconventional warfare. And how is that done? First of all, you throw everything off the table so that the bioweapons, chemical weapons, get rid of the Geneva Convention. Everything goes down. You can use biological, chemical, psychological weapons, cybersecurity weapons, attacking an occult currency attacks, for example, political attacks. All sorts of things that they, and you don't just pick one, you can layer these. You can have multi-pronged attacks that are so subtle that, as they point out, people will not realize at first they're being attacked. And I've been saying that's where we are. And I think that when we look at the military and what's happening in the military, why would we not want, first of all, ask yourself this, why would we even vaccinate a military that only had 20 deaths from COVID? Why would we take that chance? Why are we vaccinated healthy pilots that have essentially zero risk of dying of COVID? Now, in my opinion, I mean, so what's really going on here? Why would we hide it in the database? Why would we not point out that we are the military that's vaccinating our people with this RNA technology, but not the Chinese? The Chinese military isn't doing this, and nor are the Russians. So is this a military takedown? Let's just look at some things. How did we get to this vaccine? Okay, if you go back in time, and this is why I wish I could have shown you, but we couldn't get the, I couldn't get my screen share. We couldn't get this worked out, but I have slides about this. There's a paper that, that was first published about the Chinese uploading the genome from this patient that with COVID, with the first diagnosed case of COVID. And I don't believe that this is real. I mean, I don't believe that this is a really serious genetic expression of what the reality is. But nonetheless, they claim that they found the genome of SARS-CoV-2 and they uploaded it into the gene bank. Now, this is a computer-generated code. Keep in mind that we are told that the SARS virus is 30,000 base pairs long, but this code, that the only part that you need to be made sick is the S1 subunit, which is 181 to 200 base pairs. So that part can be manipulated, manufactured, clearly sequenced, etc. Not so sure about the 30,000 base pair long virus. So what was done is from one patient in China, this genetic sequence was uploaded into the gene bank. And then Inovio, there are a bunch of different ones, Pfizer, Moderna. These vaccine companies say, and this is Anthony Fauci just said this personally, that within hours of this thing being uploaded, these manufacturers had, the pharmaceutical researchers had downloaded and were working on a vaccine. So if you want to know where this whole vaccine program came from, it came from a genetic sequence given to us by the Chinese. Let's just point that out. One patient, the Chinese, uploaded this gene sequence. As I understand it, that's where it came from. And that it was, that the vaccine was figured out and a prototype was created literally within hours from that source. Now, they had reported at one point that there were embedded Chinese scientists at Moderna and Pfizer, which there had to be because we've been doing a lot of work with the Chinese. And in fact, China owns 50% of the rapid sequencing machines in the world that can really sequence genomic information, which is key in this whole manufacturing process and everything they've been doing in research. So I know we're cooperating with them. So we have embedded Chinese scientists and we have a vaccine was made from their data. And now we are giving it, in spite of the biggest death count in the VAERS data that we've ever seen, we are now vaccinating our entire military. Now, here's another point, and I'll tell you why I'm even talking to you about this and thinking about this tonight. You probably heard about the F-35 that purportedly, well, I don't think it's purportedly, it's pretty clear that the there was an F-35, I think it was on the Carl Vinson, there was an F-35 plane mishap, and the pilot ejected and was safely recovered, thankfully. But the story goes by, you know, and you can't, I can't prove this one way or another. The story goes, he was very close to, you know, landing. He was almost on the deck, a few hundred feet off the deck when something catastrophic happened and he ended up ejecting. And the story goes, it was chest pain that he said felt like a baseball bat. Now that's the rumor that's going around. And I heard this from a retired military pilot, you know, heard it from him. I don't know. So I can't prove that one way or another, but this is exactly what we heard civilian pilots warn us about. So I will, this is, I can prove, you can see these videos. So there are some very courageous civilian pilots that have been warning us that, hey, it's don't feel comfortable in civilian aircraft just because you have two pilots, because if you're on the glide slope and you're only a few hundred feet off the tarmac and somebody has a sudden seizure or something that causes them to push in the yoke, you can't respond fast enough to maybe recover from that. Just because you have an extra pilot, that's not going to do it. So we need to understand that this is a safety risk. And of course we know, I don't know what the current count is. A long time ago, the count of dead pilots was 9, including one, this civilian pilots in the cockpit. And these are from primarily vascular episodes. There've been some seizures, I think, but it's vascular, like bleeding, thrombosis type episodes. And of course they're able to get up and move around on these long flights, even though they're at high altitude, and that may play a role that they're at a pressurized 10,000 feet or whatever. That plane may play a role, but at least they're able to stand up and move around in some planes. Military pilots, they go on long flights, they go at high altitude, and they're strapped into ejection seats, often in single seat aircraft, you know, or single pilot aircraft. So they are at high risk, and they were vaccinated. Now, what happens in these cases? Because again, you don't have a backup pilot. You're not carrying passengers, thank God, but you're carrying weapons, including potentially nuclear weapons. You know, I don't know how they train anymore, but that is a potential. It violates all the safety protocols to give vaccines or give any medication to pilots that hasn't been on the market for 5 years. I mean, these guys are healthy people. So what is going on about this? And I will say it really started worrying me when I heard that that there was a timeline. Why, you know, when I was in the military and I was running sick call for 7,000 Marines, we would sometimes be told, you know, they couldn't tell us what was happening. That would be a breach of security. But they would say, by this date, we'd like to make sure that squadron so-and-so or this group of guys have their medical records and everything's all up to date, you know, that they're all been checked out. Okay, so we knew probably something was happening. Or in the Navy, my Navy colleagues that were stationed with the Navy, they knew that there were going to be a ship's deployment or something was happening because they had to have certain things done by a certain date. Why did we have these deadlines? Now, fortunately, I think the deadlines were artificial deadlines in order to coerce, to make it sound like they were going to do something on that deadline to coerce more and more active duty to take these vaccines. But my thought was, are we on somebody else's logistic timeline? You know, these are logistic timelines. If I'm going to have ships moving or I'm going to do this at this date, then you have to back that up. And these are the date marks we have to meet to get everybody ready. Is that what we're seeing? Is that at some point, I mean, is this somebody else's invasion timeline? I certainly hope not. Now, I would say this, too. I had the opportunity to talk to Scott Atlas, who is a very bright guy, and he's a Stanford professor, and he's done a lot of good things, and he's clearly on our side. And I think this is what I'm saying is nothing is not negative at all about Dr. Atlas, but he was the senior advisor in the White House to President Trump. President Trump, when he was the president of the United States in the White House, he was the commander in chief of our military. That is the role of the president of the United States. So as I saw all this happening to the military, and I was trying to say, look, if we don't vaccinate our military, I can guarantee you we'll have a standing army here next year. If you vaccinate them, you don't know. Please, somebody stop this. Well, I had an opportunity after it was too late, unfortunately, to then meet with Dr. Atlas. And I just asked him, I said, who's advising the president about this, the vaccination program for the military? I mean, this whole thing, did you ever have anybody from military medicine brief you? And the answer was no. So did you ever have anybody from Fort Detrick or the bioweapons programs brief you? And I know we can call it bioweapons defense, but whatever we want to call it, did you ever have any of those experts brief you? And the answer is no. So the president of the United States, commander in chief, with this entire nightmarish COVID issue and this whole vaccine rollout, was never apprised of the possibility, apparently, that this could be a bioweapon, that this could be targeting our military for readiness issues and worse. So I don't know what to say about that, but that is what the F-32 crash has made me start thinking about, and that's why I'm sharing with you this data this week. You know, who benefits from all this going on to the military? It's not the military guys. So and let me just I'll just add one thing here, that if you know in February or end of January, it was actually January 31st of 2020. Was when a group of researchers from Delhi, India, Prashant Pradhan was the lead author. He was a geneticist for IBM, and I don't know if he still is chief geneticist for IBM. But Prashant Pradhan reported, he and his group reported that this COVID spike protein was made in a lab. And what did they say about it? What they said was that we can clearly see that there are, in the spike protein, there are these four inserts. And these are artificial inserts that don't occur in any other coronavirus, in any other They wasn't in SARS, they weren't in MERS, they don't occur in the multiple of coronaviruses we believe are out in nature and that have been researched and genetically evaluated. There are these four unique inserts, and they don't vary from specimen to specimen. We looked at all the specimens that had been uploaded from sick people in Asia and other places now, and they and this was by January 31st. So this wasn't mostly in America. This was mostly in Asia. We had these sick people, and we uploaded the specimens, and they looked at them, and they said they all have these gene sequences that are 100% conserved, meaning they don't vary. Kind of makes a lie of the whole problem with variants, but they don't vary. And then the big bomb was, where did these inserts come from? When they ran the genetic data through the BLAST program, which looks at where things come from and what the gene could be, they ran it through, and unexpectedly, all these inserts aligned with human immunodeficiency virus, the virus we associate with AIDS. So these are four inserts that were artificially placed there. Now, and this isn't the only bit of research that supports this being a man-made pathogen, something that was man-constructed in a lab. Doesn't mean it wasn't taken from some bat DNA or RNA somewhere, but it was made in a lab to be more harmful to humans than it was in nature. That is by definition of a bioweapon. And these inserts were inserted from the HIV virus. Now, one of the reasons, by the way, I knew that this was true right off the bat at the end of January was that within a day, these guys were forced to withdraw the paper. They said, wait a minute. No, we're not going to, we're leaving the paper in place. Look at the data. It's open source. Anybody can look at this and determine for themselves, which is the way science should be done. Science isn't about censorship. It's about free exchange of ideas. But in any case, they were forced to withdraw the paper, which they did under protest. And then Zero Hedge, which is not even a medical or scientific journal, it's an economic online journal, they were deplatformed for reporting on this paper, which brings me back to military pilots, because they have a dictum, and that is, if you're catching big flak, you're over a big target they don't want you to take down. When these guys were catching that kind of big flak, the kind of stuff I've never seen in science, in scientific journal publication in my life, I knew something was up. I knew this was the key paper to trot out, because they really didn't want people to hear this story. Now, there are other reasons to believe that this was made in a lab. There's no intermediate host. There was no animals in the meat market that tested positive for this viral protein or viral problem. And they can't, this is a kicker, they can't reinfect bats with this. So they tried in the lab to get some of this stuff that theoretically can infect humans, and they couldn't get it to reinfect bats. The best match is to humans, because it's targeting a specific pathway in humans, the ACE2 pathway. And there are other things, like there's no pre-epidemic blood, banked blood that show antibodies. You know, when a normal outbreak of a disease happens, how does it happen? It doesn't happen just all at once, all over. It's been happening in the background, you know. And if you, once it's broken out and people can recognize the epidemic, they can go into the banked blood and they can find evidence of antibodies in people that donated their blood before we knew it was a big epidemic. This is like lesser phases of the disease breakout where people weren't all that sick. They didn't have that either. So essentially, there's nothing to support a naturally acquired zoonotic skip from one species into another breakout of this. And even mainstream media is coming to the understanding that this is a funded research project that NIH and Fauci and all these people funded this thing, and it was made. They want to just blame the Wuhan lab. It was made in labs all over. But the Wuhan was kind of the final common pathway. Now, I will just make this as a final point, that if you accede to the notion that this is a man-made pathogen, this spike protein, then you have to realize that the vaccine is also a bioweapon. If the man-made spike protein that came out and started this whole thing rolling was a bioweapon, then so is this. Because how is the vaccine made? This is from the Pfizer BioNTech EUA, the Emergency Use Authorization, and this is what it said. It says, the BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine contains a nucleoside-modified messenger RNA, so modified RNA, encoding the viral spike glycoprotein S of SARS-CoV-2. And that is the part, the glycoprotein S SARS-CoV-2 that had the inserts that other people could see the cut and splice area of the Wuhan lab. It's you can't say one without the other. We have to put this together and realize we are being attacked, and they're after our military. So I don't think that's by accident, and I don't think it's just the Chinese. I think they're an action arm. So we don't know completely who the enemy is, but someone does want to disable us, and I think particularly take out our military. And if you're in the military, please feel free to contact me through themedicalrebel.com. Spill the beans, tell me things. You know, if you're a person that's vaccinating people, stop doing it. You know, don't be complicit, don't help our enemies. Let's save ourselves here, and let's start by saving the military members. Thank you very much for being with me tonight, and see you next week.